Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are on Season 2, Episode 5, entitled Cardassians. This episode aired October 24th, 1993. When I saw the title of this episode, I thought we were in for something sinister. I was quite surprised by the content of this story.
Well, Cardassians do make you think of sinister, nasty things.
Yeah.
I understand that all empathy was bred out of them.
Well, don't jump ahead. Before we get started on this episode, is there anything we need to correct or talk about from the previous podcast?
No, it was perfect.
I actually haven't listened to it. How do you think it went when you were splitting the duties of describing the scenes?
It was kind of hard.
It is hard.
I have more appreciation for your monologuing.
Oh, thank you so much. Should we get started?
Go right ahead.
In the cold open, we get a weird version of the theme song. Heavy bass. I don't know what that was about. I was wondering if it was setting me up for something or if they were just trying out some new things.
It was a little bit more orchestral.
Yeah. I also thought maybe they forgot to write a station log, so somebody just threw some music on there.
Ah.
We open in the Replimat. I now know what that is and where that's located. A surprise cafeteria, as I also like to call it. Bashir's getting a drink from the replicator, and then he sits down at a table with Garak, who appears very jovial. We haven't seen Garak since episode 2 of season 1.
He's been hiding in a Jeffrey's tube.
Oh, he's not hiding in his tailor shop?
No, that seems to be where everybody, if they need to hide somewhere, they always seem to hide in one of the Jeffrey's tubes, or whatever the Cardassian name for those things is.
The conduit.
The conduit.
Where it's shielded in certain areas just enough so that Odo can't get in or out, or it's shielded sometimes so that they can't scan it, or it's shielded whenever it needs to be, and then it's not shielded whenever it doesn't need to be. And sometimes it's flooded with plasma and people are melted in it.
Yes, the shielding works based on what the story requires.
That's exactly right. Garak is wearing a bright green striped top with the horizontal stripes across the torso, and then the sleeves have stripes in the opposite direction. It was very natty. I liked that a lot.
Clearly proves he is a very effective tailor.
He looks a bit like he could be involved in a stage production of some sort. This costume is, I don't know, it's ready for the stage.
The Deep Space Nine players.
Yes. The two of them have a discussion about who is drinking what. Garak says he's drinking his smelly Rokasa juice to soothe his nerves, and he had a very demanding customer today. And Bashir says he's always wondered who his customers were, as he wasn't sure Bajorans would frequent a shop run by a Cardassian.
Thank you, Bashir. Somebody calls out what I've been saying.
Well, since it's just a shop right off the promenade, it seems like every now and then Bashir could just walk by and look in to see what's happening.
Yeah.
But he acts like he has no idea what goes on in there. But Garak says he likes to think his expertise and willingness to serve overcomes any general resentments his customers might have, which is a very Garak thing to say.
Yes.
But yeah, if we think about Duet and how that guy just stabbed the Cardassian, regardless of whether or not he was gold or heel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you think that people come to see Garak because he's also a good listener? Do you think he's like an unofficial psychologist? I mean, you go to Garak and you can just talk to him and he'll give you advice or maybe life advice. And he seems to have good ideas.
I think the opposite is true.
Because
really? He never really answers a question. When Bashir asks him a question, he answers with a question. So I don't think so. I mean, maybe he's kind of like a bartender and he just sort of keeps people talking.
Oh, do you think that would also help, though, with getting people to answer their own questions?
Yes, but I would find that irritating and would stop talking to him. Well, they talk about building trust with customers, and Bashir implies that Garak is good at that and is then able to squeeze information out of people. Really, Doctor, must we always play this game? I'm no more a spy than you are. Back when we first met Garak, there were implications that Garak was a Cardassian spy and was perhaps a bit dangerous, and yeah. Julian was terrified of him in that episode. Now it seems like he's built a rapport with him off screen, which is too bad. They could have shown that over time, even just shown them having coffee together, but this is the first time we've seen him in a season.
Right. You could have replaced the Rumpelstiltskin episode with a Garak and Bashir episode.
A coffee chat episode.
Yeah. It would have been an easy episode. You could have just had them in the Replimat just chatting over coffee. And it would have been better than
Rumpelstiltskin. At this point, we see someone behind Bashir who has what looks like a big, round, flat piece of cement or just hat that is cement colored on top of his head.
Oh, it's not just one.
Well, at first I only saw one, but yes, there were actually two.
Three of them.
What was that? I was very distracted by what was going on behind him, and we never focused in on those two.
No.
There were actually three of them.
Really?
Yes.
I only saw two.
Yeah, they look awesome. They've got really good face makeup, and they look sort of lizardy, like you said, and they have those giant gray hats.
I thought it was part of their mask, perhaps, like maybe that was just part of their alienness.
Yeah.
But when I looked them up on Memory Alpha, they had no name, at least on the show. I guess they have a name in some books later. But it does say that those are hats.
Wouldn't that be a great group cosplay?
That would be, although nobody would know what it was from.
That's true. And plus, the hats would probably hit people. And you wouldn't be able to get through doors very easily.
We'd be bumping into each other. Yeah, wouldn't be able to get through doors.
It would look great in a posed shot. But walking around, it would probably be a nightmare.
Well, Garrick reiterates his story that he's just plain simple Garrick, and Julian is dubious. And then Garrick says, now there's something you don't see every day. And I was sure he was referring to the aliens with the square hats, but he wasn't. Instead, he sees a Bajoran entering the promenade with a Cardassian child. They enter the Replimat and sit down. The child looks at Garrick, and Garrick nods in his direction. Bashir asks if he knows him, and Garrick says he's never seen him before in his life. He stands up and approaches the table, putting his hand on the boy's shoulder and says, I hope I'm not intruding. The Bajoran dude does not look amused to have a Cardassian standing at his table. And the kid then grabs Garrick's hand and bites it. Garrick screams, and then the kid runs over to the Bajoran dude and hugs him for safety. Bashir jumps up and looks at Garrick's hand. Garrick looks pretty mad, but nothing else happens as we go into the theme song.
That was unexpected.
Yes. It started with they focus on the aliens with the square hats.
Which they should have.
And then kid bit Garrick. It was very strange.
I was also trying to look to see if Morn was in that scene. But he wasn't. We return from the opening credits and Bashir comes into ops, apologizing for being late. He says, Garrick the Tailor was just attacked at the Replimat. Dax replies, another unsatisfied customer? And Miles makes a comment about how he always cuts the pants too long. Little bit
what
of goofy
pants?
Humor
what are they
in.
Talking about? That scene was so silly and very Dax on-brand humorous statement.
Yes. Although you'd think Quark would be the one constantly getting attacked by unsatisfied customers.
Quark might be the one who goes into the tailor shop. He's the only person who doesn't wear a uniform all the time.
Yes, that's true. Why with replicators would you go to an old-fashioned tailor's?
Is this
a prestige thing of maybe you want a handmade uniform or clothes?
You wouldn't. Nobody goes in there. He says that thing later about somebody always needs their pants let out.
That's true.
Maybe he's just letting people's pants out.
Odo is more interested in the story than the others, and Bashir tells them the assailant was a Cardassian boy who had just arrived from Bajor, with his Bajoran father. Odo heads to the elevator to check out the situation, obviously something interesting for him, and Kira says the kid was probably one of the orphans left behind when the Cardassians pulled out of Bajor. She says, we had no choice but to take care of them, which seems kind of a nice thing to do for the Bajorans, considering how awful the Cardassians were.
Right, but you weren't going to let kids starve in the street, I guess.
That's true. They're not Cardassian.
I think this is took me a minute to get that joke, but yes, that's right. I think this is the only thing we hear from Kira in the entire episode. She had some big episodes at the beginning of the season, then maybe a vacation.
I think we have that one line and a smile.
Yeah.
Then Gul Dukat calls, and Sisko heads into his office to talk to him. Dukat says it's been brought to his attention that the sole Cardassian living on the station was assaulted. Sisko is surprised how quickly Dukat got the news when he only heard about it himself a few minutes ago. He must have more spies than Kira.
Yeah. I mean, he literally just heard about it, and somehow Dukat is already on the phone.
Yeah.
Very suspicious.
Dukat asks, is it true that he was attacked by a Cardassian boy brought to the station by a Bajoran? It appears so, replies Sisko. Dukat says this is exactly what he'd fear. War orphans abandoned when we left Bajor. Which, if you notice, he pronounces with the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Bajor. I did notice.
It's a disgrace, and obviously these children are being raised to hate their own kind. This incident is proof. Sisko thinks he's reading a lot into a single event, but Dukat wonders, why else would this boy attack? Poor Garrick. An amiable fellow if ever I met one.
Who talks like that? It's like dialogue from a 1950s movie. An amiable fellow, if ever there was one.
Yeah.
Who says that?
It seems strange for Dukat to say that about anyone, I would say.
True.
Sisko says he'll look into it. Dukat says he wants info so he can use the story in his fight to bring these orphans back to their homeland. This is a tragedy that all of Cardassia has to address. Wow. This seems uncharacteristically charitable for Ducat.
Very suspicious.
Yes.
First of all, he finds out in 0 seconds, like, Ops is bugged.
Yeah.
But then he's all worried about the orphans.
Shouldn't that be a huge red flag?
All of it's a huge red flag, yes. Then we go to what looks like guest quarters, and Sisko and Bashir are talking to the dude who arrived with the kid. He's saying they didn't come to the station to cause trouble, and he asks if Garrick filed a complaint. Sisko says no, but the Cardassian officials ask that we look into the incident. The guy says, funny how they showed no concern for these children when they left his son and dozens like him to fend for themselves. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Sisko asks how he came to adopt the boy, and the guy says that he and his wife adopted him because they didn't think that Rugal should suffer for crimes committed by others. Sisko asks why he attacked another Cardassian, and he says the Cardassians already think these orphans are being raised to hate their own people. Hating Cardassians isn't too hard, the guy says. We told him the truth about what Cardassia did to Bajor. But then he says, to us, he isn't even one of them anymore. He's Bajoran, and we love him just as if he was our own flesh and blood. Sisko and Bashir look at each other. Nothing is ever simple on Deep Space Nine.
He seems very genuine. He seems like a good guy.
He does. Yeah.
In Quarks, the big alien who brought the Bajoran and the Cardassian kid to the station is playing Darbo, and he's winning. And he's winning a lot. Quark walks by, shaking his head. He tells Bashir, who is standing nearby, there isn't anything as depressing as a winning streak that won't stop streaking. Poor Quark, he's losing money.
Did you notice Quark's outfit? It's new.
I did not.
I would say it's a downgrade. He's wearing some kind of aqua-colored pants that look like maybe they're fleece or jersey material, so really thin.
Oh.
And his jacket, while tailored nicely, as he always has tailored jackets,
yeah,
and it's well-fitted, but it's color-blocked with all these different squares of color, and it's very muted. It's not great. It looks like something that's been sitting in his closet since the 70s.
Oh.
Like the 1970s. And then there's also that alien at the Dabo table and his huge jacket.
The big alien does have a very distinctive costume. It actually looks like he has cell phones, you know, old cell phones stuck to the front of his jacket.
So you thought it looked like he had cell phones attached. I thought it looked like he had a bunch of little steampunk things attached.
Oh.
And it was just funny how they were laid out.
Yeah.
You know, like rectangular fashion.
Right.
It was weird. The whole thing was weird. But what was weirder was he had sort of Princess Leia hair, kind of curly hair on the sides of his head.
Yeah.
And then on the top of his head, it looked like his brain was exposed. This was a bizarre looking dude, and he had kind of a pig face.
Yeah, it was a very strange looking alien. Unpleasant looking as
well.
Yeah,
for one scene.
Quark walks away and Bashir approaches the guy.
The steampunk jacket guy?
Yes, that's the one.
That's how I refer to him in my notes.
Bashir engages him in conversation. The guy asks if Garrick is okay, and Bashir says he has no broken bones. But Bashir has some questions. He's saying he's trying to get the facts for his medical report. The alien is a little cagey, seemingly not wanting to tell him anything, but then he eventually says he knows the family well enough. He visited them on Bajor several times, and it must be torture for that boy to live like that. Hated by the people he thinks are his parents. Told day after day he's a worthless Cardassian scum, beaten if he even looks the wrong way. Rugal is their revenge against all Cardassians. Uh-oh. Oh,
grim.
Accusations
awful
of abuse.
Yes.
I'm sure they have a mandatory reporting requirement in Starfleet.
You think so?
Oh, definitely.
Even for aliens that are not in the Federation? Because I would think really what you're doing is interfering in something that you shouldn't be interfering in. That's one of my questions in this episode, is do they really have authority to be dealing with custody issues?
That's a very good point. Well, and it raises the question as well of how old would a child need to be before they could ask for asylum in the Federation?
Well, even if he asked for asylum, since the Bajorans aren't in the Federation, he wouldn't get handed over to the Bajorans.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I don't know this whole custody issue. Yeah. I don't know what the rules are or the laws.
Yeah, it seems complex.
Yeah. But we go back at this point to the Bajoran guy, of course, because now they want to ask him about, hey, are you beating this kid?
Yeah.
And the Bajoran guy says, this is not true. Rugal will tell you we have not mistreated him. And he figures the story must have been caused by a Cardassian. Sisko says that while he's investigating, he'd like Rugal to stay with the school teacher, Mrs. O'Brien. Do you think anybody warned Miles about this?
They'll fill Miles in later.
This is where my notes say, do they really have the authority to take children away from their parents?
Wow.
But anyway, the guy doesn't like it, but eventually he gives in and he goes to get the kid. And we hear Rugal in the background saying he didn't do anything wrong. But he did. He bit a guy.
Yeah, but he bit a Cardassian, so it's not like it's a real person.
I guess.
Remember the guy in the second episode? He'd murdered a Cardassian, and after the occupation, they let him out.
Oh, gosh. That was the third episode, A Man Alone.
Ah, yeah.
I don't know why I remember that kind of crap.
Because we're good at that.
When they come out of the back room, Sisko tells the kid he's not being arrested, and he's sure this will be straightened out in a day or two. The father tells him it'll be okay because they won't hurt him. They're humans, not Cardassians. And the kid goes off with them.
Sisko in this scene, he just has this very quiet but extremely authoritative voice. He did that very flat thing where he's almost like a Vulcan delivering an emotionless request that really doesn't have a no to it. It's right. Like, you're going to have to do this.
It's funny to me how you like to talk about those emotionless scenes and how well you think Avery Brooks plays those and how much you like Sisko doing that. And I always think he just seems like such a dud when he does that. I have really? Such a different view of it.
Huh. I think it's because he's almost suppressing human emotion in those situations. And I'll point back to that because when they leave, he stops at the door and turns around and looks back at the father. And I have no idea what that look is. It's really ambiguous. And I'm sure Avery played it to be ambiguous. I'm not sure whether it was suspicion or whether it was just Sisko's personal discomfort at having to do this.
Or maybe it was Avery Brooks saying, did I have another line?
Oh, my God.
And the guy's like, no, you're fine. This is why we're married, because you find me hilarious.
Because you say that, I'm now picturing him turning around and going, line? Oh, that is classic. In the infirmary, Bashir is scanning Garrick's hand, saying that something good did come of this. They might have the opportunity to save a young man's life.
Did you notice in this scene that Garrick's hand was human flesh colored? It's like they forgot to paint it.
Oh.
Because it was the bluish gray in the scene where the kid bites him. But here, it just looks like a normal hand, normal human hand.
Oh, dear. It was the last shot of the day. I don't go to makeup. Just roll it.
Oh, man.
Bashir says perhaps this will help Gul Dukat in his efforts to resolve the entire war orphan predicament. This immediately gets Garrick's attention. He says, I beg your pardon? Bashir fills him in on Gul Dukat calling Sisko immediately after the biting incident and showing concern for Garrick's well-being. He says, you never mentioned you were friends. This makes Garrick laugh uncontrollably.
That was funny.
He did seem very amused by the idea of them caring about Garrick's well-being.
Uh-huh. That has raised all the red flags for him.
Oh, yeah. He's very suspicious of Dukat's interest in the war orphans.
Yep.
Bashir asks if he's missing something, and Garrick says, tell me, Doctor, is there a single trait you would ascribe to me and other Cardassians? Would it not be our attention to detail? Do you think we simply forgot about these poor orphans when we left Bajor? And who would you guess was in charge of the Cardassian withdrawal from Bajor? He seems to be implying here that Dukat could have done something at the time to help the orphans, but didn't.
And he never really says it, just like I said earlier.
Yeah.
He answered a question with a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
Just say it.
Yeah, and sort of observations as well. It is interesting how he avoids direct questions, and he's surprisingly well written.
Hmm. Then we go to Ops, and Sisko is talking to Dukat again. Sisko tells him it's not so simple as just returning the boy to Cardassia. Dukat brings up the accusation made by the businessman, which I put in double quotes.
Steampunk guy.
And Sisko points out, that's all it is, an accusation. There's no proof.
So we learn in this scene that the Cardassians actually deliberately left behind the war orphans. Mm-hmm. As if the Cardassians just couldn't get that little bit worse.
I don't understand why they would do that. When I first heard the story, I thought it was because they were actually Bajoran children.
Oh, right.
Turns out, no. So that makes no sense why they would do that.
Well, they come on to that a little bit later.
Dukat says he has complete confidence in Sisko's ability to be thorough in his investigation. He asks for a sample of the boy's DNA so they can figure out if he has any living relatives. During this conversation, Bashir enters and suddenly pipes up that he has a question. Sisko looks pretty irked by this breach of protocol. Bashir says, isn't it true that you were in charge of the evacuation of Bajor? Don't cause an international incident, Julian. When Ducat says he was, Bashir asks, then why did you choose to leave the orphans behind? And Sisko glares at Bashir.
Oh, yeah.
Ducat says he did not choose to leave them behind. He was ordered to leave them behind by the civilian leaders. It was their decision to withdraw from Bajor, which was a decision he clearly opposed.
Oh, yeah. Every time he's on, he mentions, yes. I think, how he's opposed to the withdrawal.
Ducat asks who has been tutoring him, and Bashir says his old friend Garrick, which does not amuse Ducat.
Oh, yeah. Throw that in Ducat's face.
Yes. He says he's regretted that decision of leaving the orphans behind, and then he kind of hangs up on Bashir. He's lying, Bashir says. Sisko wonders if that's an opinion or if he has any evidence. Bashir says, I have Garrick. He seems to think there's more going on here than we realize, but he doesn't really tell me what he thinks. I have to deduce it, which is not going to help your case, Julian. Sisko says, so you deduce that Garrick thinks Ducat is lying about something you're not sure of, and you proceeded to interrupt my conversation to confront him about it, whatever that might be. Bashir apologizes, and Sisko says, don't apologize. It's been the high point of my day. Don't do that again. I love that scene.
Oh, yeah. It was great how when Sisko put all the pieces of it together, how ridiculous it sounded.
Yes.
And then the leadership bit of, it was fun watching Ducat squirm. Don't do it again.
Exactly.
A little bit of forceful leadership from Sisko.
Dax then asks, why would Garrick want to undermine Gul Dukat? Bashir says he's not sure. He doesn't think he likes Ducat much. Sisko says to have Garrick in his office at 2100 hours. They work weird hours on the station. 2100 hours is not normal working hours.
Did you notice when Sisko walks back to his office how Kira like looks up and smiles at Bashir and like gives him a look?
Yes. I did notice that. I think, the last time we see Kira.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that was her enjoyment at seeing Ducat put on the spot or whether it was Bashir getting told off by Sisko. It could be either one of the two, I guess.
I think she was enjoying Bashir getting told off by Sisko.
that was my read on that.
But did you notice that this never happens?
Yes.
Garrick is never in Sisko's office at 2100 hours or any other time.
Yes, I'm wondering if it was cut. Was this a scene that they had and they decided wasn't necessary, it was cut,
yeah.
Or they work on the assumption of, oh, you know, it's something that'll just happen.
Yeah, it's something strange.
Yeah. We now go to the O'Brien's quarters, and Miles comes in and sees Rugal sitting on a chair playing with some kind of handheld device. He's probably just, you know, texting his friends.
It's 93. I'm guessing it's a video game.
Miles helps Keiko set the table for dinner. He notices she only has 3 settings and assumes that Keiko has sent Molly to stay with friends. Oh no, Keiko says. She's asleep. She and Rugal played all afternoon and he wore her out. Miles frantically whispers, you let them play together? The boy almost bit somebody's hand off. But Keiko says she was with them all afternoon and Rugal is very gentle. Miles says gentle was bred out of the Cardassians a long time ago. Keiko gets closer to him and whispers, you know, that's a very ugly thing you just said. When he starts to explain it away, she says, I don't need to hear it twice, and she walks away from him.
Ouch.
He looks stunned that she doesn't automatically hate the Cardassian. Wow. Miles is letting his own personal prejudices come out in this episode, isn't he?
Maybe this is the lesson.
Oh.
There's always a lesson.
It could be.
Maybe this is it.
Keiko tells Rugal that dinner is ready, and he puts down his game and comes to the table. Keiko takes food from the replicator and turns around, saying, I hope you like it. She then stops when it appears Rugal is praying. Probably giving some kind of blessing for the food to the prophets.
I like how dinner is ready means I'll order it now from the replicator.
I just turned the replicator on and said, give me food.
Yes. It's ready.
She puts the food down in front of Miles as they look at Rugal, who has finished praying. Miles says, what is this? She says, I found some Cardassian recipes. It's a stew made with Cardassian Zabo meat. Miles looks very dubious at this point. She says she thought Rugal might enjoy a dish that's popular on his own world. Wouldn't that be a Bajoran dish, seeing as he thinks that's his homeworld?
I always love how on Star Trek, whole planets are treated as the same.
Yes.
It's like a plate of food from Earth would be representative of any person from Earth.
Yeah. Here's some bangers and mash.
Yeah.
I think Keiko here might be showing some unconscious bias because she said this is food from his world without thinking maybe his world is actually Bajor now.
I think, you know, Keiko, she thinks she's doing the magnanimous thing by giving him something from his planet of origin.
Okay.
This seems very Keiko on brand to me.
Yeah, that's true. Keiko tastes it and seems to think it's okay. Miles is just not into it. And he and Rugal push their plates away, both at the same time. Rugal doesn't even seem to try it.
Kindred spirits, those two. They don't like green goo.
Yes. Do you have anything that's less green goo?
I loved when Keiko tasted it. She like very cautiously takes a bite and then she's like, eh, it's okay. And she seems happy. And the other two are just, no.
She does seem a little more worldly at times than Miles.
Yeah, for sure. Miles would like bangers and mash.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Now it's later and Miles is working at his dining room table when Rugal comes in. Miles seems to be working on the biggest laptop ever invented. The keyboard is like 4 inches tall. It must weigh about 17 pounds, at least.
Yeah, they've got away from these super slimline ones. They want nice, big, brick-built laptops.
Miles asks Rugal if he's having trouble sleeping. Rugal says, "What are they going to do with me?" Miles isn't sure, but he says Rugal might have something to say about it. He should be telling Commander Sisko what he wants. Rugal just says he wants to go home, which Miles interprets as Cardassia, but Rugal means Bajor. Miles asks if it's tough for him being a Cardassian on Bajor, but he says it's not his fault. He was just born this way, and his parents hate other Cardassians, not him. He says his parents have never done anything bad to him. Miles laughs. Come on, even I got my bottom whacked by my dad once or twice. Not me, he says. My parents followed the teachings of the prophets.
These really do sound like decent, good people, don't they?
I know.
They follow the teachings of the prophets. They don't hate the innocent. They do seem like very genuine people.
They just don't like Cardassians, which makes sense.
Reasons for that.
Reasons, yeah. Then he asks Miles what he thinks of Cardassians, and Miles is like, well, you can't hate all of them, which was very funny. But the kid says, did you know the Cardassians murdered over 10 million Bajorans during the occupation? We had a test on it in school. I wish I wasn't Cardassian. Miles feels for him as the music swells into the ad break.
I loved this part of the show. Miles was basically forced to confront his own prejudices about the Cardassians.
Yeah.
Him sort of saying what he thought out loud, you can't hate all Cardassians. He's met ones he didn't like. Basically makes him realize his own prejudice in this situation. I thought that was really well done.
I also thought it was interesting when Keiko kind of poked him earlier when he made the negative comment. And that really stung him, what she said. And, you know, she was pretty clear.
Yeah.
And maybe he sat and thought about it for a while. And then also, who knows, they didn't show the rest of it, but maybe during dinner he recognized that Rugal is just a kid.
Yeah.
And he was probably perfectly well behaved once they actually gave him some food he wanted to eat.
Well, I think this is the whole point of this scene of Miles being forced to confront his own prejudice against the Cardassians, confronted with someone who truly is an innocent victim, almost as much as the Bajorans.
Yeah.
And another thing we learned here was the Cardassians did kill a lot of Bajorans. I mean, not a lot in human terms. Humans are way better at killing millions of their own citizens than the Cardassians were. Bashir is tossing and turning in bed when suddenly he's startled by a noise and discovers that he's actually been outstalked by Garrick. I was amazed.
Yeah.
Garrick is in his quarters and loudly whispers, "Come, doctor, get dressed. We need to be going to Bajor."
That's funny. Yeah, he never quite went that far with Dax. Well, not yet.
We now cut to Bashir ringing Sisko's doorbell, and Bashir is in his full uniform, while Sisko is in his PJs, and with a silky red robe over the top. He has some nice PJs, and if you notice, they're purple.
Sexy purple PJs.
I thought he would have just been asleep in a pair of Starfleet boxers. I was disappointed in that.
You said that before in Move Along Home.
Yeah. Bashir says he needs to use a runabout. Sisko doesn't even blink. He's waiting for the why. "It's Garrick, sir," says Bashir. "He wants to go to Bajor." "And for what?" "He wouldn't tell me." Sisko says, "Well, by all means, will one runabout be enough?" I think he's being sarcastic.
This is so funny.
Then someone from Ops calls to say Gul Dukat is calling with an urgent message, and Dukat apologizes for calling so late. Yeah, he didn't really
How does
care.
He know it's late? It's not the same time there.
But he's calling because the DNA test has shown that Rugal is actually one of Cardassia's most prominent politician's sons, a guy called Kotran Padar. He was the exarch of a Cardassian settlement on Bajor 8 years ago. The boy was believed to have died in a Bajoran terrorist attack, and Padar is already on his way to reclaim the boy.
I love how Dukat calls it a terrorist attack when it was Bajor just on their own planet trying to regain control of their own planet.
Well, we know what Dukat's opinion on this whole thing is, if they should never have left and Bajor was theirs. And we got a lot of insight into this when we saw Maritza playing Guldahil in duet. That sort of Cardassian attitude that, you know, this was almost like it was their property. They had to do it for the good of the Empire.
Right.
Sisko sighs. "It's not that simple. The boy wants to go back to Bajor. Ducat doesn't understand why he'd want to go back to live with the same brutal people. Ugh.
Yeah.
Sisko says he can't find any evidence to support that accusation, and now he can't even find the guy who said it.
So the steampunk guy disappeared. Very suspicious.
I'm wondering here, did he disappear, or do they need to check the dumpsters, or did he fall out of an airlock after he delivered the guy?
Yeah, we'll never know.
It's starting to seem very suspicious.
Right.
Ducat is sure the boy will want to return home with his real father. Sisko doubts it. Either way, Sisko says we'll have to see what happens when Padar gets here. Then he hangs up. Bashir says Garrick must have heard about this already. What could he be looking for on Bajor? There's only one way to find out, says Sisko. So, clearly Garrick, before he woke Bashir, knew something.
Right.
Do you think that someone on Cardassia had been in contact with Garrick? Or do you just think that Garrick figured something was up and just wanted to go to take Bashir to Bajor and go and look for whatever it is he's looking for on the planet? Or do you think he had a heads up?
I think he has contacts who keep him informed.
Yeah.
In the same way that Ducat has contacts in the other direction. I think there's spies everywhere.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he knew.
Definitely. Then we see a shuttle leaving the station and heading to Bajor. But we don't get any time with them in the shuttle. I was disappointed. I wanted to ride along. Instead, we see Garrick and Bashir enter a small courtyard on Bajor with a woman and two kids sitting at a table. The sight of the Cardassian approaching makes the kids run off. Bashir asks the woman if this is the Tozat Resettlement Center, and she says it is. He introduces himself and says he's looking for some information on a Cardassian war orphan who was placed there. The woman doesn't recognize Rugal's name or the name of his father. I do recognize this woman, though, as someone who was on The Young and the Restless. This is Sharon's mother. She used to be on the show a long time ago. She hasn't been on. She disappeared and obviously went to Bajor.
Yeah, to volunteer.
Yeah, to volunteer at the center.
That's really nice of
her. Yeah. When they say the adoption took place about 8 years ago, she says, you'll never find anything from back then. Garrick says the Cardassians are meticulous record keepers, and they taught many worlds, including this one, how to keep records. This is a thing you suggested about Maritza in Duet, teaching on other planets, right? Teaching them how to file.
Yeah.
Maybe this is where you got the idea from. Anyway, she says she wasn't a volunteer back then. She was in the underground. And Garrick says, really? Perhaps we have met. That was hilarious. Now she looks like she wants to punch him.
She does not seem very happy to have a Cardassian in her orphanage.
Right.
And Garrick is poking at her a little bit.
Well, he's being like he always is. But Bashir says, can we just check your computers before she gets too mad and there's a fight? She says their computers aren't working because they can't get a technician to come to the center. They're not a top priority. Garrick says, perhaps he can be of service. Bashir very suspiciously says, you know about computers? Garrick says, oh, I dabble with isolinear data subprocessors. It's a hobby of mine. Which, sure.
More hidden talents of Garrick.
Bashir smiles. That was cute.
Yes. Garrick is working on the computers and Julian is watching. Garrick is also wearing a rectangular object over his left eye that looks like some kind of magnifying glass.
He's also pressing the buttons on the computer, like with a copper device, instead of touching the buttons directly. It's like that thing that I see advertised on Instagram right now during the pandemic as a way to not touch surfaces. I was like, it came from this show.
If Garrick's doing that, it's probably because he doesn't want to leave fingerprints behind.
Yeah, that is what I thought.
Bashir says, I continue to underestimate you, Garrick. Garrick says it's no more difficult than sewing on a button.
Yeah.
He takes off the eyepiece and hands it to Bashir, who examines it. He says, you carry this with you everywhere? Garrick replies, it's a simple tailoring tool. You'd be surprised how often someone needs their pants let out.
This whole thing is so weird.
Is that a euphemism for something else?
I don't know. And what was that thing? Was it just a magnifying glass?
I don't know.
They never tell us.
He quickly gets the computers working, but says Rugal's name and his adoptive father's names aren't in the system. It's either been misfiled under a wrong name, or this is entirely the wrong resettlement center. He says he will download the files from the entire province into a data clip that they can take with them.
What's a data clip? Is that like a USB stick that you can clip on your belt?
It's a Cardassian version of a USB stick, yes.
Nice.
Just then, a Cardassian girl in a purple dress appears from behind them. Then a few more kids appear, not all of them Cardassians. The first girl says, excuse me, sir, have you come to take us back to Cardassia? Garrick looks shocked. I was really surprised at this. He did seem genuinely surprised.
Yep.
I'm afraid not, child, he says, and quickly turns to leave. On the way out, he tells the woman that she'll find her computer system fully functional now. Bashir stops on his way out and looks at the kids again, but then keeps going. Oh, that was awful.
Yeah.
That scene was just really tragic. I don't think Garrick expected to come face to face with the reality of these kids that were abandoned and left behind.
Yeah.
We know that the Cardassians are quite nationalistic in terms of, you know, their species. Maybe the racist? That might be the right term. Mm. But to see their own kids sort of left behind like that, I think seeing the reality on the ground was maybe more shocking to Garrick than he expected.
Yeah, but he just turned it off and left.
Yes.
Bashir looked a little bit more impacted by it.
I think because maybe that's Garrick's training.
As a spy or a tailor.
Yes.
Either way.
Tailors are not known for being heartless. Another thing I'm just going to point out, it's really great to see Sadig actually being given an opportunity to act. It's almost like it's a different character.
It is.
The way it's written, the way it's performed is so much better than anything he did in season one. And it's clearly not him. It's clearly just really crappy writing.
Yeah. Again, we've gotten to episode 5 now in season 2, and not a single example of sexual harassment by this guy anyway.
And we go into the ad break.
Now we're in the shuttle on the way back to the station. Garrick asks the computer to set up a databank cross-referencing age group, sex, year of adoption, but Bashir interrupts him and says, "Disregard that order and shut down all engines." Garrick looks up and then quickly pivots. "I'm sorry you're upset about the orphans, but children without parents have no status in Cardassian society." I doubt children without parents have status in any society, which is very depressing, but reality.
In summary, Cardassian society really does just suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know even the Nazis had adoption? Granted, it was for the only for the racially pure, but...
Well, that's a different problem. But that's what I was going to say. It's one thing if it's an orphan from a traditional family. I can almost understand if it's coming from an affair or something untoward or whatever. But sometimes, like, parents just die, like if there are accidents or something. So what, then are kids just thrown out in the street? I don't know. I don't understand this statement completely. But I guess you're right. Cardassians just suck.
Right. There you go.
Garrick says the situation is unfortunate, but he doesn't make the rules. Bashir is annoyed. He says, "No, but you do play the game, don't you, Garrick? And there is a game being played right now as we speak." "There are always games," Garrick says. "The trouble is," Bashir says, "I don't have the slightest idea what the game is all about. So you're going to tell me what's going on in that plain and simple head of yours, my Cardassian friend, or we're going to sit here until we rot." This was the best Bashir line of the whole show.
Exactly my point. This is, the character is unrecognizable.
Yep.
And so much better.
Garrick, in his usual way, starts answering questions with questions. He says, "Tell me, Doctor, why do you think the Cardassians left Bajor?" Bashir relays the story Dukat gave about it being a decision made by the civilian leaders. Garrick says, "And isn't it interesting that one of Cardassia's most notable civilian leaders has suddenly entered the scenario? You're saying Khotran Padar was involved in the decision to evacuate Bajor?" "Very good, Doctor," Garrick says. "But that makes him a political enemy of Gul Dukat, because he lost his job as prefect when they withdrew. And seemingly out of nowhere, Dukat takes an interest in this orphan boy," Garrick says. "A boy who suddenly appeared on the station." Garrick says, "I believe in coincidences. They happen every day, but I don't trust coincidences."
That's another great line.
Yeah, I like this little scene. This little interaction between the two of them was cool.
Yeah. So we get a little more background here into Cardassian society and really how negative their society is in so many ways.
Right.
Deliberately contrasting this with Bajoran society, where the Bajorans are prepared to adopt Cardassian children because it's the right thing to do. Yeah. And their innocence.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Cardassians are, oh, it's a child with no parents. It has no status.
Yeah, this show doesn't have to work very hard to convince us that Cardassians are awful and Bajorans are victims and good people.
Well, Cardassian society is very negative.
Yeah. I mean, we've had, what, 4 Cardassians on this show? We had Dukat, who's clearly terrible.
Yeah.
Garrick, who's a bit of a mystery, but seems, what does Dukat say? An amiable fellow.
Yes.
Then we've had Maritza, who was trying to make himself a martyr as Guldar Heel. So not a bad person, but also still was part of the occupation.
But also someone who wanted to change Cardassian society.
Right.
Who could actually see the flaws in their society, which is, you know, a noble goal.
Yes. And then we had the fourth one, who was the I don't even know what his name was, but he was the one who was trafficking weapons back episode 2 or 3. And that's pretty much it. And so it's interesting if you look at it that way, as really our only example of a terrible Cardassian is Dukat so far, including even in this episode, because we get this Padar when he shows up.
Right.
Which he does in the next scene.
Indeed. So back on the station, Kotran Padar has arrived at Miles's door. He comes to see his son, but Miles wants to chat first. He asks Padar when was the last time he saw his son. On Bajor, he had just had his 4th birthday. He probably doesn't even remember me. And then I thought, in a really sort of heartbreaking, you know, piece of hope, the way he says, does he?
Yeah.
And I thought that was great little piece of acting.
Yep.
He seems full of bluster and the sort of the Cardassian confidence. And then the actor putting in that little bit of this hopeful, does he? Oh, man, that just got me.
Yeah, especially when Miles is like, no.
Yeah, that was sort of really humanizing.
Yeah.
Haha, the character.
There's a lot of fatherhood in this story. I'm actually quite surprised that Jake was not in this episode.
We've seen so much of the Jake-Sisko relationship. It's interesting to put a different perspective or a different type of fatherhood in it.
Yeah.
Which we see here.
True.
Miles says, I think he spent most of his life trying to forget you. The boy hates everything he is. He hates Cardassia. He hates being Cardassian. Kotran says that's because he grew up amongst Bajorans, but now I'm back in his life. Miles interrupts him and says, he may not want you back in his life. Kotran stands up, indignant. He says, Mr. O'Brien, I don't know much about humans. I don't know how you view family, but we do almost anything to protect our families. Miles says it's the same for humans. I have a daughter myself. She's 4, the same age your son was when you lost him. Kotran says, then I expect you can imagine what I'm feeling right now. He says on Cardassia, family is everything. We care for our parents and our children with equal devotion. In some households, 4 generations eat at the same table. Then looking rather sad, he says, I failed in my responsibility to my family. Miles tries to justify what happened by saying, you had no idea he was alive. No, says Kotran, I should have tried harder. To abandon my son and allow him to be raised by Bajorans, I have disgraced everything a Cardassian believes in. Wow, they really have some contempt for the Bajorans, don't they? They raised his kid, and he just has contempt for them.
Well, he thinks of them as lesser, so he left his kid behind with a lesser race.
Yeah.
Which, that's a pathetic way to think, but...
Yes.
But here we are.
Then Keiko comes in with Rugal. Keiko is wearing an extremely good outfit. She is very smart.
Oh.
Did you see that?
I did not.
She's wearing a fantastic setup.
Was it purple?
No, it wasn't purple. It seemed very 90s because it had a little vest thing going on it.
Fancy.
She definitely gets the pick of wardrobe. Kotran's face softens as he sees his son. Clearly, he recognizes him. He says hello and asks if Rugal remembers his face, but the boy says no. Ugh.
No.
Again, terrible. Kotran asks if he'd like to see some pictures of himself from when he was a child, but Rugal is very opposed to the idea. He moves closer to the boy and says, you have to understand after the attack, there was nothing left of the house. Your mother was dead and I cried for you. I missed you so much I couldn't even stay on Bajor because it was too close to the happy memories of you. Rugal isn't really into sympathy here. He shouts, it was your own fault. What the Bajorans did to you, they were forced to do and you deserved it.
He's not wrong.
Oh, yeah. Although, one thing I wonder is, wouldn't he have tried to find a body?
Yeah, we don't get a lot of detail on what happened.
I mean, personally, I think I would want to see absolute proof of death before going, oh yeah, he's dead, we can't find him. Kotran puts his hands on the boy's shoulders and starts to say, he understands, but the boy shrugs him off and says, you'll never understand. You're a Cardassian butcher and they killed your son for your crimes. You are not my father and I will never go back to Cardassia. Kotran looks horrified.
Well, as horrified as he can under all that makeup, but yes.
He does a great job, though.
Yeah, this actor's great. Another great guest star with a long list of credits.
I couldn't believe he was in soap.
Yeah.
I could vaguely tell, you know, I'd seen him in something.
Yep.
And then when I looked him up, I was like, oh my gosh, it was him.
Well, he's so serious. It's hard to link him with comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
So the kid was 4 when he supposedly died. And that was 8 or 9 years ago, because I think they say about 8 years ago. So he's supposed to be like 13.
That would be about right. Yeah.
I looked up this actor because I'm like, there is no way that kid is 12 or 13. And he was born in 1968. So he was 25 when this episode aired.
Oh,
why would they pick someone so old? He didn't look like a kid in the slightest, except he wasn't very tall.
Yeah.
But I was really surprised by that.
Well, that's what all Cardassian children look like. They appear older than they really are. They grow up so fast. So something this ties to is when Maritza talked about attacks on civilians by the Bajorans. This is an example of that. And Kira saying about how she wasn't proud of some of the things that she would do. So clearly they were attacking Cardassian settlements.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Although, during an occupation, are there any civilians?
Well, the kid's right. They did deserve it. I don't know how to look at it any differently.
Well, part of it is I expect Rugal is actually exposed to the reality of the situation.
Yep.
Being on the ground and actually being able to see what the Cardassians did. Rather than the Cardassians, who have either a romanticized or a revisionist view of the occupation. So
yes,
the Cardassians maybe don't even really fully understand what they did. But the Bajorans, anyone who was on Bajor, who lived it, knew what happened.
Imagine a kid on Bajor and the same age kid on Cardassia. Now imagine somebody teaching you about the labor camps and the occupation. Imagine what you're going to learn from each perspective, or how you're going to learn it. It is not going to be the same story.
Cardassia was just trying to civilize these savage Bajorans with their brutal ways and their backward religion.
Well, they were trying to obtain resources in order to save Cardassia. That was Maritza for Cardassia.
Yes.
And that's the way they're going to teach it and look at it. Whereas on Bajor, it's like, I don't know, these guys came in and killed 10 million of us.
And stole everything they could.
Kira had that whole thing about all the awful things that happened at Galatep.
Yeah.
It's a very different perspective. And this kid, even though he's Cardassian, he got the perspective of the workers in the labor camp. They're not workers, they're prisoners. Victims.
Yeah, right.
Let's use the right word.
Yes.
In Sisko's office, we have Rugal's adopted father and his biological father. Padar says he has no intention of allowing a Bajoran court to rule in the custody of his son. Padar quotes Cardassian law, but the adopted father's like, there's no more Cardassian law on Bajor. Gentlemen, Sisko says, I think you may need an arbitrator to settle this. The adopted father says it can't be a Cardassian or a Bajoran. What about you? He asks Sisko. Sisko is willing. Padar says he has no objections because Sisko is a father too. And Sisko says, very well then. I would not get in the middle of this. This is a landmine left and right. Odo calls at that moment to say that Gul Dukat has arrived on the station. And everyone is like, okay.
I would find that slightly strange too, that Padar would be prepared to allow a Federation arbiter in this situation.
Yeah, because how much does he know about Sisko?
Do you think Padar might be making a cultural assumption here that human and Cardassian family values are similar?
Well, he learned it a little bit from Miles.
Yeah.
After the ad break, Sisko's giving a station log. He says the arrival of Gul Dukat only fuels his suspicion that they're being manipulated in some unseen manner. Good thinking, Sisko.
Oh, I like that. I like he's finally figured out something's going on.
Well, I think the fact that this is like the 10th call of Dukat, something is clearly up.
Yeah.
And we drop into a scene of Bashir and Garrick watching something scroll by on a very pink and very blurry screen. This is not how you search for things on computers. It's not microfiche.
Yeah. Bashir and Garrick are trying to learn how to use the Control F key. In the conference room, the one that we didn't really know existed until season two, I think. Or maybe it's a holosuite. But no, it looks like it's actually off ops, so...
Yeah, this was a mystery to me. Where did this room come from?
They sealed off a bit of ops and just put up some walls.
Well, we kept saying in season one, they need a conference room. And now it looks like they magically have one.
They probably had Miles build them one.
Well, yeah.
I could see Miles doing general contracting work as well.
That's true, with his sleeves rolled up.
So in the conference room, Gul Dukat has joined the hearing. Sisko wonders why he came such a long way for a custody hearing. Well, because a bad penny always turns up, obviously.
Yeah.
Dukat says Padar is an eminent member of the civilian assembly. The matter has generated a great deal of interest at the highest levels of our government. Sisko asks, are you representing your government? Not exactly, Dukat says. I like to think I'm here representing all of the children who are abandoned on Bajor. I want to see Rugal reunited with his father.
He's so full of it.
He is almost Win level disingenuous.
Oh, gosh.
Sisko says, well, I'm sure Padar appreciates your support because I was under the impression you two were political adversaries. Padar says, we've disagreed in the past. And then Dukat objects that the past has no relevance here. He says, what is relevant are the children.
Ugh.
What are we going to do about the children?
It's very Vedic Win.
Oh.
Gross.
Sisko says he'd like to go over the events that led up to Rugal's disappearance 8 years ago. I still like to ask the question of, isn't the kid old enough to ask for asylum?
He's 25. This hearing is pointless.
It seems like he should be old enough to ask for asylum in the Federation.
It definitely does.
Yeah.
Dukat is such an interesting character. Of the handful of Cardassians that we've encountered on this show, yep, he has got this crazy long neck that makes him look like a lizard or a dinosaur. I mean, it feels like it's 6 or 7 inches long. And then when you look at Padar, he has no neck. His collar kind of covers everything. He just has the head sitting on top of the collar. Dukat is a bizarre specimen.
I think this is the first time we really get a lot of great close-ups of Dukat, the whole makeup and the prosthetics. He looks extremely reptilian in this. It's so impressive.
Or gross.
I do keep thinking of how many hours he had to spend in makeup. Because if you look at the neck, where it goes all the way down to the shoulders.
Yeah.
There's patterning and coloring and everything on there.
Yeah,
it's
very intricate,
beautifully
work on
complex.
The neck. Yes.
It really is a work of art. And one final thing is how the actor actually manages to perform in that getup that must be so restricting.
I think about that with Garrick and with Odo too, how they can do that, and Quark. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
After searching 7,420 files for a misspelling, Garrick has a revelation.
You press Control F and then you can type in the name, it'll search. We don't have to look at each
one. Well, they're looking for a misspelling, remember. He says, Dukat is much smarter than this. He wouldn't have left a file to be found. It seems like we could have come up with this sooner.
Yeah.
Garrick says, we need to find the person who wrote that file in the first place. And he figures out that person's name in like 2 seconds, and it's Jomot Lucen. Then we go back to the mystery room.
We go back to the newly constructed conference room, and Sisko asks Rugal if he remembers anything from the time of the attack. Rugal says no. The first thing he does remember is his father teaching him how to swim. His adoptive father, of course. And they smile at each other.
Oy, oh, killing us.
That was heartbreaking as well. Clearly there's a strong bond between these two.
Yep. We're doing that jump back and forth that we do in the last 10 minutes of a DS9 episode again, because now we're back to Bashir. And he's located Jomot Lucen, and she says she remembers Rugal exactly because he was the only Cardassian boy they had at the time. The other Cardassian children were turned into us when they were found on the streets by Bajorans, but Rugal was brought in by a Cardassian military officer. Jomot doesn't remember her name, but she was attached to the command post at Tarak Nor. Garrick, out of sight of the woman on screen, smiles as he obviously figured out what's going on, and hopefully he'll tell the rest of us.
So, this points to the Cardassians already abandoning children on Bajor, even before the occupation ended.
Right.
So this is completely a societal norm.
Because the kid was 4, and then Padar left, but he said that was 8 years ago, but they didn't pull out of Bajor until like a year ago.
Right. Back at the hearing, Miles is saying the boy hates Cardassians. Padar was heartbroken. I can only imagine how that would feel. Then Bashir and Garrick enter, and Bashir asks for permission to ask a few questions. Sisko nods and sits down. Bashir asks Padar if news of his son's discovery has become public knowledge on Cardassia. Padar says the government has not yet revealed the story, but when they do, it will be the end of his political career. Then Bashir says, well, that's a shame, since the inquiry is about to begin regarding Cardassian involvement in the coup on Bajor. That was from the first 3 episodes of this season. And isn't Gul Dukat one of the key witnesses in that inquiry?
Dun, dun, dun.
I think we all knew Dukat was behind it.
Yeah, there's no way he's this interested in one kid.
Yeah. Dukat stands up and says, this is irrelevant and insulting.
Ugh.
He tells Sisko that he's lost control here. Yes, Sisko says, it seems that I have.
And he never even moves. He's just like,
yes. I think he's enjoying Dukat's discomfort here enormously.
Definitely.
Then Bashir says he's been trying to find records of Rugal's adoption, but they are missing.
Mm.
There's a surprise. However, we did find someone who was working at the center at the time Rugal was brought in. And she remembers the Cardassian soldier who brought him in. During this whole scene, Garrick is just smiling like a Cheshire cat in the background.
Yes, he's like standing in the back of the room.
Yeah, he has this giant cheesy grin the whole time.
Yep.
Very funny. Well, he is such an amiable fellow.
Yes, we've covered that.
Bashir says the question is whether or not this officer deliberately left the son of Khotran Padar at the relocation center with full knowledge that he was not an orphan. Perhaps even with the hopes of humiliating Padar someday. And the penny drops.
Yep.
I wouldn't know, says Dukat. Well, Bashir replies, would you happen to know of a base called Tarak Nor? Dukat says, kind of surprised, that was here. This base station was Tarak Nor. Jomot Lucen clearly recalls that the officer who brought Rugal in was from Tarak Nor. Dukat, who has lost his battle, heads out of the room. He basically runs away.
Yep.
I thought That was funny. I mean, he's like, I'm not staying for this. I'm just going.
He does stop, though, to glare at Garrick on his way out the door.
Yes, yes.
And he just smiles.
Bashir shouts after him, asking, who is the commanding officer of Terek Nor? Dukat doesn't answer before the door closes. Bashir says, for the record, the commanding officer of Terek Nor 8 years ago was Gul Dukat.
Oh, man.
Yep. All exposed.
Yep. After the ad break, we get station log stardate 47178.3. And Sisko says, after long and difficult deliberations, he's decided to let Padar take his son back to Cardassia, though I'm convinced his Bajoran foster parents treated him with love. Rugal has been the clear victim in this conspiracy, and it's time for the healing to begin. I don't know. That sucks.
So after all of this,
yep.
Rugal is forced to return. That seems like a bit of an anticlimax.
I was surprised by that outcome, and I don't understand it.
Yep.
Walking through the promenade, Padar is telling Sisko that Bashir has given him the leverage to keep these events quiet. He tells Sisko that he's helped salvage his political career and he won't forget that. Then Sisko says, perhaps you'll use your influence to help other Cardassian orphans on Bajor. Well, yes, we'll see. Obviously, saying absolutely not, which irks Sisko. He gives him a look.
Well, the way Sisko looks at him from this point onwards is just a look of, you disgust me.
It was, yes.
Padar's reaction to this was so, oh, well, now the other orphans don't affect me. I've got my son back. Forget it.
But you know
I'm
what?
Done.
It was on brand for what we're saying about Cardassians and what we believe. So
unquestionably.
There are many times this show could easily step back and do the easy thing or the, I don't know, the happy thing. And it doesn't.
Yeah.
It just is like, nope, he is not going to help.
Oh, yeah. Even though he's gone through this experience, it doesn't change his standpoint.
Right.
Yeah, and Avery manages to really deliver just this absolute dagger's look. Just nice, so nicely done.
Yep. Miles is coming down the stairs with Rugal, telling him that he can come back and visit anytime and he'll arrange it. Padar asks Rugal if he's ready to go, and he walks on with his head down. Padar says, well, I suppose it will take time, to Miles, and he looks back at Sisko as they leave.
And Sisko's still giving him that look.
Yeah.
Miles seems to have formed a bond with the boy, which clearly looks like it's some kind of learning experience for Miles of, you know, maybe all Cardassians aren't bad.
I definitely think that is part of the story here. I also think it's a part of the story that we're showing the contrast of Miles as a father is able to connect with another child, even though it's not his own. Meanwhile, Padar has no interest in anybody but his own son.
Oh, that's a really good point. I never saw that.
Yep.
I guess that's another one of those contrast episodes like the Nagus.
Right.
So we go back to the Replimat where all of this started. And Bashir is telling Garrick, there's one more question he hasn't figured out. Why did you want to expose Dukat? What's the truth about you and him? I never tell the truth because I don't believe there is such a thing. That's why I prefer the straight line simplicity of cutting cloth. So you're not going to tell me, Bashir says. You don't need me to tell you, Garrick says. Just notice the details. They're scattered like crumbs all over this table we regularly share. Until next time. And he goes off. Bashir smiles. The end.
Okay, well, that's the end of the episode. What do you have for overanalysis?
Okay, let's make a stop. So I assume that putting the Rugal in the orphanage was supposed to be temporary, because I doubt Dukat would be able to think that far ahead and know how high up the political ladder that Padar would get. I assume this was something to embarrass him at a local level, where he was the exarch of a settlement on Bajor. So I assume he was doing this just to get rid of him from Bajor, and it turned into a longer term thing because, you know, the kid didn't matter.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because it's like a thing we put into motion 8 years ago. I mean, that's truly the long game. And how could he have possibly known what was going to happen in 8 years? But if instead he was just trying to get him off the planet, this worked. Yeah. But why he didn't kill the kid, I guess maybe he did always have this plan that if he needed him, he could go and find him.
Yeah, if Dukat needed this guy's support, even on Bajor, he could probably threaten to reveal that, oh, you abandoned your kid.
Right.
The next thing is, where was Morn?
Where was Morn?
I searched every scene for him and did not see Morn.
I'm stunned by this.
Yeah.
I thought he was in every episode, but I did not see him either. And we went back and looked a little bit and couldn't find him.
Yep. And I think I've come to the realization that Miles is much more of the modern day human in his attitudes and behavior than any of the other Starfleet people. He seems more like a 21st or 20th century human.
Yeah.
And is designed as somebody that the audience can relate to.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate take for sure.
It's only taken me a season and five episodes to figure that one out.
Why do you think Ducat walked out at the end? He had plausible deniability.
I think simply because he's not used to being confronted by anything. He is not prepared to answer questions.
He had to know that all of his interest in this made him look guilty.
True.
Just all of a sudden being interested in the orphans. That guy, he's awful.
I do think he's one of those individuals who will just drop everything when it's not working and just, you know, leave the mess and walk away from it. Not my problem.
I also think he's got a bit of a marketer in himself where he just will keep saying the thing until the thing becomes true and it sort of works for him.
Yeah.
Like a very 2020 political move.
Yes, if you repeat the lie enough.
It becomes truth. Or it becomes reality, maybe not truth.
I think that would fit with the Cardassians as well, of what we've seen from them. Sell the lie, don't sell the truth. I think that wraps up my overanalysis.
Okay, let's move to women in the future.
Were there any women in the future?
No. Kira had one line. Dax had one line. No women in this future. Also, we have a custody battle with no mothers.
Well, almost like a Disney movie, the mother was dead.
It's funny because I wrote that down too. But I feel for his Bajoran mother. I mean, she didn't even get a chance to say goodbye and the kid's gone.
Yeah.
She lets him go to DSN and then boom, gone.
But Keiko was...
Keiko was good. You're right. I forgot about Keiko. She actually was pretty good in this episode. And she scolded Miles for his unconscious, not so unconscious bias. And I thought that was pretty good. And also, she did a very Keiko on brand thing of, oh, now we're going to serve Cardassian food. This is very Keiko.
I mentioned this on earlier episodes. She is the most Star Trek character.
She can be.
With her sort of hopefulness.
But she can also be so one-dimensional. I think we talked about that a lot. We don't need to rehash that. I'm still not sure how the station had any real jurisdiction over this kid.
Yeah.
When both adoptive parents weren't there, the mother wasn't there, had no say, didn't, you know, they could have called her. They could have FaceTimed her in to this hearing, and they didn't even do that.
Well, I could take a very cynical approach here and say maybe at a high level on Bajor, at a government level or so, there is a, we just like to get rid of these kids. So even though Bajorans are adopting them and are looking after the children, there's still a sort of an attitude of, oh, you can get rid of this kid and send him back to their father. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Get rid of the kid.
I don't know.
That would be a very cynical approach on it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, ultimately, I don't think orphans in general get a lot of attention and a lot of help.
Yeah.
And now you've got orphans from Cardassia. Yeah. That kind of makes sense. And there was even that hint earlier of the woman at the orphanage saying she couldn't even get her computers fixed because she wasn't a priority or the orphanage wasn't a priority. But again, I think that's pretty normal.
Yeah. So you're thinking that it is possible that on Bajor there is a bias against them?
Maybe. But we didn't see it, though, at all.
Yeah.
Anywhere. So we're making an assumption.
Yeah. Even with Kira, when she said we had to take them in.
Right. The woman at the orphanage, she didn't show it. The father, the adopted father, obviously he didn't show it.
Yeah.
The woman that they called about when Rugal was dropped off, she didn't show it. I guess the only clue was that the woman couldn't get the computers fixed at the orphanage, which I would have to believe would be a pretty common thing here as well, that they wouldn't get much attention from the government in terms of money.
Right.
I don't have anything else about women in the future because there were barely any women in this future. So I think I'm good. Let's talk about rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
Thumbs up. Definitely.
I agree.
Good episode.
I also give it a thumbs up. I think it was a very good episode, very well written. Okay, that wraps up Season 2, Episode 5. Come back next week for Episode 6. In the meantime, if you'd like to share your own overanalysis of this or any episode of Deep Space Nine, please contact us. You can email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.